Welcome, everyone, to this information webcast for the BGS auction for 2018. I have with me Paul Cardona, who's going to help me present today, including the practical aspects of participating in the auctions, such as the application process and the bidding procedures. We also have with us representatives from the electric distribution companies, or EDCs, who will help us with any questions that you may ask. And to clarify that, we'll take questions at two points in the presentation, one roughly in the middle, and then again at the end, and we'll pause at each point to answer your questions. You may ask them at any time, however, as Rebecca stated, by locating the Q&A panel on your screen. This presentation is to provide information on where we are in the auction process at this time, and also to provide information that is most useful to prepare you to participate, given that the window for submission of the Part 1 applications, and we'll explain that in further detail in the presentation, but that window will be opening tomorrow. So where we are in the auction process is that the board has rendered its decision for the procurement of supply for BGS customers right before the Thanksgiving holiday. To be more precise, the board rendered its decision at its agenda meeting on November 21st, and this decision is memorialized in a board order that has been posted to the BGS auction website. And that basically concludes the regulatory proceeding on BGS, or Basic Generation Service, that began in April 2017 when the board issued an order soliciting the electric distribution companies, or EDCs, and other parties to submit proposal on how to procure supply for BGS customers in New Jersey. At that time, the EDCs filed a proposal to continue the BGS auction process substantially as it has been implemented in the past 16 years. The regulatory proceeding that just concluded included discovery, two rounds of written comments, as well as a legislative-type hearing. The board, in its decision, approved the core elements of the EDC's proposal, and I'll just go through them briefly, and we'll expand upon these in the slides that follow. The board approved a single statewide process to solicit offers for all BGS load not already procured in the state. It approved two auctions, so although there's a single process, there are two auctions, one for large commercial and industrial customers, or CIEP, and one for residential and smaller commercial customers, or RSCP. The board also approved the supply periods proposed by the EDC, namely a one-year supply period for large commercial and industrial customers, and a three-year supply period for residential and smaller commercial customers. For both of these auctions, the auction format will be a clock auction. That is a multiple-round auction process where in each round the price ticks down as long as there are more tranches bid or more supply being bid than is needed. The board also agreed to consider the auction results within 2 business days of the close of the last auction. The documents incorporating the board's decision will become the final and the governing document for the auctions. The process from here is that the EDCs will prepare those documents in a compliance filing, and the board will confirm that those documents conform to its decision. As they become available, those governing documents will be posted to the website, and to list those governing documents here, we have the supplier master agreements, or SMAs, and there's one for each auction, so the BGS RSCP supplier master agreement, as well as the BGS CIEP supplier master agreement. There are also the auction rules Again, one for each of the auctions, the final BGS RSCP auction rules, and final BGS CIEP auction rules. There's also each company-specific addendum for each of the electric distribution companies, or EDCs. And finally, the board order in the docket, which is ER 17-040335. And I list these documents here in part to offer the following disclaimers: that throughout this presentation, we're going to make statements that describe or refer to these governing documents, and such statements are summaries only and are qualified in their entirety by our reference on this slide to the governing documents. Of note is that the SMAs, or the supplier master agreements, will be identical in form to those used in the 2017 auction, as part of the board's decision was to not approve a clarification that had been sought by the EDCs to Section 15.9. And I'm talking a lot here about those documents being posted to the BGS auction website. I will talk a little bit more about where to find those documents in the BGS auction website within this first section. Now, those documents will be posted, but we're also making available to suppliers and potential suppliers hard copy, bound hard copies of the supplier master agreements and the auction rules. So those are available from us in two separate booklets, one for our BGS RSCP auction and one for the BGS CIEP auction. And you can request a bound copy by emailing us at bgs-auction@nera.com. Bidders must accept the terms of these final documents as a condition of participating in the auction, and bidders bear full responsibility for reviewing and understanding the terms of these documents as they become available. So that's where we are in terms of the proceeding. And we're at this point in the auction process where certain key announcements have already been made, and we'll go over those and the activities in the auction process that have already taken place. And then we'll look forward to the application process, and we'll provide the details of how to participate and to submit your materials to participate in the auction. We'll talk a little bit about the bidding procedures as well, and close by providing some details on those governing documents that I was discussing, in providing and highlighting certain provisions of the supplier master agreements, and then providing the details of the auction rule of that clock auction format. In addition to the presentation, there is a bidder information packet that provides additional information. So I talked about the fact that we provide in hard copy upon request copies of the governing documents, the supplier master agreements, and the auction rules. The rest of the bidder information packet is online, strictly online, and will be organized into sections that correspond to the BGS auction process section that was in the first bidder information packet released in October. So there are additional details on the regulatory process, on the activities that took place prior to the board decision, on the application process that describe both the Part 1 and the Part 2 applications in more detail and provide instructions for submitting materials, on the bidder training and additional information releases that will occur during the auction process. And that includes training activities for bidders that will be registered to participate in the auction. There are also additional details on the conduct of the auction, including a description of the auction format and bidding procedure, as well as the term and conditions of the auction software that will be used to conduct the auction. Finally, there's also a section on post-auction activities that describes the process, decision by the board on the auction results, and the process for execution of the supplier master agreement. So this next portion, I'll provide an overview of the auction process, including where we are in the process and the activities that have occurred, some key announcements that have been made, and then start looking forward to the timeline of the auction process from this point. So as I mentioned, and as the board has approved, there's a single auction process, but there are two auctions, one for larger customers, one for smaller customers, residential and smaller commercial customers. For the larger customers, those customers are on an hourly price plan. The auction determines what's called a CIEP price, and that price is measured in dollars per megawatt day and applied on the capacity obligations of customers. Suppliers are paid this price and customers pay this price, but suppliers are also paid for other components, including energy at the real-time PJM hourly price. And when I say that, I mean the load-weighted average residual metered aggregate real-time locational marginal price. So whenever you see the real-time PJM hourly price or the hourly real-time spot price, that's what we mean. Suppliers are also paid predetermined rates for other components of supply, including $6 a megawatt hour for ancillary services and an EDC-specific rate for transmission. All those components are collected from customers that take BGS CIEP service, but suppliers are also paid a fee that's levied on all CIEP customers, by which I mean customers that take BGS CIEP and also customers that take service from a third-party supplier, but were they to take BGS, they would do so on a CIEP tariff or rate. In the RSCP auction, the payments are simpler, in that the auction determines an all-in price in cents per kilowatt hour. Those smaller customers are then on that stable price for a three-year period, and the suppliers are paid this price for every kilowatt hour of load served. And I'll explain that that's true in practice, but there's also the possibility of a seasonal factor, and I'll go into a little more detail on that in a second. Now, for each of these auctions, as I mentioned, the auction format is going to be a clock auction. Let me spend a little bit of time on that. So the auction format is a multi-product design, meaning that the tranches for all EDCs will be procured at once. And it's also a multiple round design in that the suppliers will state how many tranches they want to supply at prices that are suggested by the auction manager. And if there is excess supply, the prices will tick down, and that will continue until the number of tranches bid or the supply that's being bid is exactly equal to what's needed. So we talked about two different auctions to different type of customers at a high level, talking about larger commercial and industrial customers versus residential and smaller commercial customers. That can be made a little more precise, and there's an even more detailed description within the auction rules of what customers are considered CIEP customers versus customers that are not. So the customers that are considered CIEP is first, all customers in certain rate classes that are served at transmission or primary voltages. And the specific rate classes for each of the electric distribution companies, the Public Service Electric and Gas, Jersey Central Power and Light, Atlantic City Electric, and Rockland Electric are provided on this slide. In addition to these rate classes, where all customers are CIEP customers, there are also rate classes where customers that are at or over 500 kilowatts are CIEP customers, and those are provided to you in the last column of this table. That 500 kW is often called a CIEP line or CIEP threshold, and that has changed over the years, and you can see when it has changed and from what level in the data description document that's posted to the data room of the BGS auction website. Now, in addition to those customers that, were they to take BGS, they would be required to do so on a CIAP tariff or rate. Non-residential RSCP customers can also opt in, so choose to receive BGS on a CIAP tariff and rate. And any customer that wants to do so must notify the EDC by the start of the year. So for the 2018 auction, by January 3rd, 2018. We will provide at that time a posting of the number of customers and some descriptions of those customers that have opted, if any, any RSCP customers that have opted into CIAP. Note that whether we're talking about CIAP or RSCP customers, where RSCP customers are all other BGS customers that are not CIAP, there are no switching restrictions, so BGS customers are free to come and go from BGS, provided that they provide appropriate notice to the EDC that they wish to do so. So continuing to talk about the BGS CIAP auction, providing you a little bit of an overview, there was an announcement that was made on November 15th regarding the BGS CIAP auction, providing the number of tranches that would be at auction, providing the megawatt measure for those tranches and the tranche size as a percentage of the load of each of the ECDC, as well as the minimum and maximum starting price. So the minimum and maximum starting price, so $425 per megawatt day as the minimum, and a maximum of $550 per megawatt day as a maximum, that means that in this multiple round auction that I described a little while ago, the prices for round one will be selected within that interval. So the prices for round one of the auction can be no lower than $425 per megawatt day and no higher than $550 per megawatt day. The tranches are provided to you on this slide, so there's a total of 42 tranches in the auction, looking at the entire volume across all of the EDCs, and any one bidder can bid up to 19 tranches in the auction. So that's the statewide load cap. So the statewide load cap is a maximum on the number of tranches that any bidder can bid and win in the auction. Also provided to you here is the CIAP peak load share for each EDC and then per tranche. And a tranche is defined as a fixed percentage of the BGS CIAP load for an EDC that's equivalent to about 75 megawatts. Now, importantly, the 75 megawatt is on an eligible basis. That means considering customers that are taking the service and also customers that are taking service from third-party suppliers, and that could come back to BGS CIAP. A reminder that BGS CIAP suppliers supplies a full requirement service, providing energy transmission, capacity, ancillary services, as well as any other service as may be required by PJM. So I noted that all these measures were on an eligible basis because CIAP migration is substantial. The figures that are given to you here in terms of the percentage of accounts, 73.45, or the percentage of load at roughly 85%, is the percentage of customers that have switched to third-party suppliers, and percentage of accounts and load that have switched to third-party suppliers. So that's quite substantial. We talked briefly about the CIAP payments and rates. This provides a little more detail and itemizes those payments a little more and provides a figure of the flow of payments from the BGS CIAP customer and from a TPS customer to the electric distribution company as payments for their rates. And then the electric distribution company pays the BGS CIAP supplier for providing full requirement service. So again, the components, both of the rates and of the payments of the BGS CIAP supplier or energy at the hourly real-time spot price, ancillary services at a fixed rate, $6 per megawatt hour, a transmission based on the OATT rate, capacity that's based on the auction price, and for each of the BGS CIEP customer, for each of the EDCs, the way in which capacity is collected can be a little bit different. And for more information on that, you can look at the company-specific addendum and the draft tariffs that are posted to the BGS auction website. Then there's the CIEP standby fee, which is 0.015 cents per kilowatt hour. And that standby fee is paid by both BGS CIEP customers and third-party supplier TPS customers. To the extent, again, that when we're talking about a customer that's taking service from a third-party supplier, were the customer to take BGS, if the customer would do so on a CIEP tariff or rate, then the customer pays the EDC that 0.015 cents per kilowatt hour. And similarly, those are the components of the payments to the BGS CIEP supplier. So turning now to the BGS RSCP auction, at the same time that the announcement was made for the BGS CIEP auction, we also made the same type of announcement for the BGS RSCP auction, providing information on the tranches and on parameters of the auction, namely the minimum starting price and the maximum starting price. So the interval within which the round one prices for the BGS RSCP auction will be selected is between 11.5 cents per kilowatt hour to 17 cents per kilowatt hour. And you have here the number of tranches for the auction. So there are 57 total tranches in the auction, and there is a statewide load cap of 21 tranches. Again, the statewide load cap is a maximum on the number of tranches that a bidder can bid and win in the auction. However, you will notice that there's an additional parameter here for the BGS RSCP auction, namely there's also a load cap for each EDC. So again, that's also a maximum on the number of tranches that a bidder can bid and win, but not overall across the entire auction, but per EDC. So the 14 tranches for PSE&G, for example, means that the maximum that a bidder can bid and win for PSE&G in the auction is going to be 14 tranches. You also have the RSCP peak load share. Again, that's on an eligible basis. And the number of tranches for each tranche, that's a fixed percentage of the BGS RSCP load for an EDC, and it's equivalent to about 100 megawatt on an eligible basis. The supplier, again, for BGS RSCP, provides a full requirement service, providing energy, transmission, capacity, ancillary services, as well as any other services as may be required by PJM. The migration on the RSCP side is more modest, with 31% of load and 16% of account for customers under 500 kW. That masks some differences across the different classes and sizes of customers in the RSCP side of the auction, and more detailed information on that provides additional switching statistics is available in the data room, in the monthly portion of the data room. This slide provides the RSCP payments to the supplier and the pricing from the customer's standpoint, and this provides a theoretical seasonal factor of 1.0284 as a summer factor, and that illustrates the fact that there is provision to have a factor applied to the auction price, a factor greater than one in the summer, to align with greater summer costs, or less than one in the winter to align with costs in the winter. And I say theoretically here because, as you will see in the next slide, The seasonal factors are actually all ones in the way they were filed and expected to stay at one for the compliance filing, meaning that the auction price is actually the price for every kilowatt hour that will be provided, and there is no seasonal factor, but there is the possibility of a seasonal factor. So if the price in the auction had been 10 cents, as in this example, and the summer factor had been 1.0284, then the suppliers would be paid the auction price times the seasonal factor, or 10.284 cents per kilowatt hour in the summer. On the customer side, the customer rate is based on all the components of supply. So a customer taking service today would be served for during the supply period for 2018 auctions, rather, would be served by winners at the 2018 auction, 2017 auction, 2016 auction. The EDCs have a rolling three-year procurement where one-third of the supply is procured every year, and therefore those three prices that would have been attained at those three auctions plus the seasonal factors for these three auctions would be used to calculate a weighted average seasonally adjusted price. In this example, it is set at 8.54 cents per kilowatt hour, and then the rate design methodology, as further explained in the company's specific addendum for each of the EDC, multiplies that system average weighted price by a multiplicative factor for each rate class. So in this example, that factor is 1.015, indicating that the rate class that we're looking at is slightly higher cost to serve than the system-wide average. And that then translates into a rate for the rate class of 9.822. So this is a simple example just to illustrate the method at a very high level. There are different rates for different rate classes, including different summer and winter rates and time of day and so on. And the details of that are in the company's specific addendum for each of the EDCs. As I mentioned, the example in the previous slide was to illustrate a principle of what's possible under the supplier master agreement with the seasonal factor in the for the RSCP auction. However, the provisional EDC-specific seasonal factors are all ones and are expected to remain one for the compliance filing. And there will be a final determination of the seasonal factors, whether they remain one or whether they change to something else, that will be determined no later than 6 days before the auction. There will be an announcement to that effect, and of note is that whatever those seasonal factors are, as determined 6 days before, no later than 6 days before the auction, those seasonal factors will apply for the entire period of the BGS RSCP Supplier Master Agreement for the entire 3 years. So the announcements that I have been talking about in terms of the parameters of the auction and the tranches available in each of the BGS CIEP and BGS RSCP auction was made on November 15th. And in this table, you have other announcements and other processes that are now completed at this point, including FAQs that were first posted on August 15th, and as FAQs and questions are asked from bidders, the question and answer that's provided to any bidder is also posted to the website as an FAQ, posted normally every Tuesday. The FAQs are posted more often during the application process so that any information that's provided to a bidder is also provided to all others on a fair and equal basis. There was a first information webcast on the EDC's proposal as filed to the board on June 30th, 2017 in October. And in September and October, bidders were able to submit alternate forms of guarantee and propose modifications to the letters of credit. The final letters of credit, integrating the comments received and final list of acceptable modifications, integrating requests that had been received, were posted on November 6th. On October 18th, I'm sorry if we're going a little bit out of order here, on October 18th, the application forms were posted in illustrative form, and that, you can go see them right now, that allows you to see what the requirements are for the applications to participate in the auction. And there are illustrative only because the process, as we'll explain in more detail, is online. Finally, of note is that in addition to the FAQs that are posted every Tuesday, there is a Q&A that was posted regarding the association and confidential information rules portion of the auction rules that provides at length questions that have been received in throughout the years on how these particular rules are applied and what kind of restrictions that they may impose on bidders. So that document is posted to the auction rules page of the bidder info tab of the auction website, and that brings me to the next slide of where to find those documents on the BGS auction website. So at a high level in the navigation bar that you see, you have various tabs, and so in particular for the bidder info tab, it's the tab that's open on this slide. And when you have a tab open, then you can select a particular page. So we have as pages here the application process, the information session, auction rules, and contract and credit. Mainly, the bidder info tab has the core documents for bidders. So in the application process page of the bidder info tab, for example, you will see the illustrative application form. On the info session page of the bidder info tab, you will have the presentation from today, the presentation from October, as well as the bidder information packets as additional materials and information for you. There's also a auction rules page in the bidder info tab where you have the auction rules and also where you have the association and confidential information rules Q&A that I was discussing. And finally, on the contract and credit page, you have the contract documents, all the letters of credit, and the posted acceptable modifications. I talked about two other types of documents in the prior slides about them being posted to the BGS auction website that are not on, in these pages. One is the company-specific addendum for each EDC, and that's under the auction tab and under the BGS proceeding page, and also various orders issued by the board regarding the BGS auction process are also on the auction tab just to the left of bidder info and under the BPU docs page. There's other pages of interest to bidders, of course, the data room, the FAQs, the news have all the announcements that we provide, as well as the full calendar of events is available there as well. In addition to those pages and tabs, the bgsauction.com website has a search capability and a site map to help you find anything that you would need. And talking about calendar, this is the calendar of events coming up. As I mentioned, the Part 1 form opens so bidders can start submitting materials for the Part 1 application starting tomorrow, and the deadline for the Part 1 application is December 12th, so it's Part 1 application date. To be more precise, the deadline is 12 noon on December 12th. Applications are then reviewed, and bidders that have a successful application are qualified and receive such notice of qualification by December 15th. After the holiday is the second part of the application process, with the Part 2 application being due on January 10th. and the applications have been reviewed. It takes a little bit longer for the Part 2 application, and bidders receive notice, if they're successful, that they are registered to participate in the auction by January 18th. The auctions then begin first Friday in February for the BGS CIP auction, and then the BGS RSCP auction begins on Monday, February 5th, and potentially at that point, both auctions will run concurrently. There are two events for training for bidders in preparation for the auctions themselves, a webcast, a third webcast for registered bidders on January 23rd, as well as trial auctions where you can practice all aspects of the bidding procedures. That's the calendar of events, and I also mentioned there would be additional information releases. I mentioned the CIP opt-ins that would be released in early January as we know whether any non-residential RSCP customers have opted into the CIP tariff or rate. There's also going to be an announcement on transmission rates that's expected on January 5th. The final seasonal factors that I mentioned that are currently all ones, but that could change, and final rate spreadsheet on January 17th. There's then an information release about mark-to-market on January 23rd, as well as the final decrement formulas and the amount of the tranche fees. Finally, this is not an announcement in the sense of an announcement that would be posted to the website, but rather any bidder that has been registered to participate in the auction will be informed of the actual starting prices, meaning the prices in round one for the auction 3 days before that auction is due to begin. Finally, I will note that after the auctions conclude, the auction results are subject to board approval. The board has committed to 2 business days from the close of the last auction to consider the results, although the board has the option to consider the BGS CIEP auction results or the BGS RSCP auction results at different times. There's a note that if conditions are such that the board's offices are not accessible, then that decision period could run for an extra business day. The results of each auction, so the BGS CIEP auction, BGS RSCP auction, are considered separately, but in their entirety, meaning that it certainly would be possible for the board to approve the results of one auction, say the BGS RSCP auction, but not the results of the other. But what's not possible, when I say that the results are considered in their entirety, what I mean is that not possible for the results for the BGS RSCP auction to be approved for one of the EDCs, say PSE&G, and not for another, let's say JCP&L. So the results have to be approved for all EDCs or for none. That concludes the overview of the auction process at a high level, plus where we are in terms of events in the auction process and the proceeding, and I'll now turn it over to Paul to take us through the practicalities of the application process.
Thank you, Chantal. My name is Paul Cardona, and I will be assisting Chantal in the administration of the 2018 BGS auctions. If you call Newark during the application process, there's a good opportunity that you will hear my voice to help you guide you through the application process. The application process for the 2018 BGS auction is in two parts, a Part 1 application as well as a Part 2 application. During the Part 1 application, bidders provide details about the applicant and make certain certifications. Once successfully completing the requirements of the Part 1 application, a applicant becomes a qualified bidder and is allowed to move on to the second part of the application process called the Part 2 application, in which bidders submit additional certifications as well as financial guarantees in order to participate in the auctions in February. The application process is online. where bidders fill in forms and provide responses to the requirements of the applications. They upload documents to support their applications, as well as provide certifications in the form of inserts, which I'll get into a little bit more detail in a couple of slides. The only information that is required in hard copy form are the documents for pre-auction security, which I'll describe later. The application website is separate from the VGS auction website. You would go to the application website separately instead of the VGS auction website, which provides information and documents about the opportunity. We've provided the application website at the bottom of this form. You can also access the application through the information website by clicking on the bright orange links on the right-hand side of the page, as well as the upper right-hand side of the page. The Part 1 requirements are simple and are identical to what has been required of past BGS bidders. The Part 1 application is generally broken up into six parts. The first four sections of the application are for bidders to provide contact information. This is where the bidder designates a bidder team who will correspond with the auction manager during the application process and during up into the auction, where bidders designate legal representatives who are able to accept service of process on behalf of bidders during the BGS auction period and during the BGS supply period, as well as designating credit representatives. The second section, or the second general portion of the application, details with the licensing requirements to participate in the BGS auctions. There are no state licensing requirements to participate in the BGS auctions. However, a bidder must be a load-serving entity in PJM in order to become a BGS supplier. In this section, bidders are either able to confirm that they are currently a load-serving entity or certify that there exists no impediments to them becoming a load-serving entity prior to the supply period. Section 6 and 7 of the Part 1 application ask for financial information for the entity on whose standing the bidder will rely. This includes senior unsecured debt ratings, as well as financial statements such as the SEC Form 10-K, 10-Q, or any other financial documents. A team of EDC representatives will review this financial information and to determine the applicant's creditworthiness that will help determine the pre-auction security required with the Part 2 application. Foreign entities have additional requirements under the terms of the Supplier Master Agreement, specifically Article 6. Section 8 of the Part 1 application allows bidders to provide drafts of those documents in order to prepare for the execution of the SMA if they are to win at the auction, to kind of get ahead of the eight ball. Finally, Sections 9 and 10 allow bidders to submit certifications agreeing to the terms of the supplier master agreements and the auction rules, as well as to agree to the confidentiality of the list of qualified bidders. Bidders are also asked to certify that they will not assign the rights of their qualified bidder status to a different entity after they are qualified through meeting the requirements of the Part 1 application. Finally, Section 11 of the Part 1 application allows the bidder to provide explanations for any documents that are missing or to provide additional materials for the auction manager's review. So in order to fill in the Part 1 application, there are a series of steps that need to be taken. The first step is to request an account. And requesting an account is simple. You go to the BGS application website, click on the Get Account tab, and then fill in the required fields and click Submit. The information will be sent to the auction manager, and we will prepare for you login credentials. Login credentials will be provided to individuals who have previously requested an account. So if you've filled in the form already, you don't need to do so again. We will be providing you with login information and instructions later this evening, so you will have that information in your inbox. Additionally, bidders who were qualified or registered to bid in the 2017 BGS auctions will also be sent to their authorized representative from the previous BGS auction their login credentials. For bidders that are returning, we requested for confirmation that the authorized representative hasn't changed so that we can make sure we send the information to the correct individual. If the authorized representative will change, please inform us of that fact via email at bgs-auction.com so that we can get the login credentials to the appropriate individual. The second step in preparing for the filling in the Part 1 application is to download the applicable inserts. And the inserts essentially seek additional information from applicants, and any signature required by the Part 1 application will be included in the inserts. So it's important that you download those prior to filling in the Part 1 application so that you can get the appropriate signatures from within your organization. There are inserts that are applicable to all applicants. So if you're bidding in the RSCP auction or the BGS-CIP auction, you'll be required to fill out the inserts set of inserts there that apply to all applicants. Bidders participating in both the CIEP auction and the RSCP auction have their own set of inserts. Bidders that are participating only in the RSCP auction have their own set. And then finally, bidders participating in only the CIEP auction have their own set. Bidders that are participating in both the RSCP auction and the CIEP auction do not need to download the inserts applicable to bidders participating solely in one of those auctions. Once you have requested an account and downloaded the applicable inserts, the next step is to actually log into the application website and access the Part 1 form. To do so, go to bgs-application.com, select the Part 1 application tab, and then click Login here. Fill in the information, and you'll be taken directly into the form. So the architecture of the form is very simple, and there are three actions that we ask that the bidders take. The first is to fill in fields. So these will be text boxes that you type in information about the applicant. The next action taken by applicants is to click on radio buttons that are in response to questions asked. Some radio boxes, depending on the answer that you click, will expand the form with additional fields for you to fill in. Finally, there are places to upload documents in support of your Part 1 application, including inserts and financial information. Those will be indicated with a Choose File button. You click on that button, and it will prompt you to go to the place on your computer where that file is saved, click OK, and then it will upload it to the Part 1 form. Finally, at the bottom of the form, there are buttons for you to print, save, and submit the form, so you do not have to finish this all at once. On the right-hand side, there are also useful documents that are posted, and those will be available when you log into the Part 1 form. These include a glossary, a description of the review process, as well as detailed application and login instructions. I mentioned in a previous slide that certain inserts apply to all bidders. These are inserts 1 through 5. While they apply to all bidders, not all of these inserts must be filled out in order to complete the requirements of the Part 1 application. The Part 1 first insert, the authorized representative inserts, ask that the ask for the information for the authorized representative who serves as the main point of contact for the bidder team with the auction manager team. The authorized representative is able to name up to three nominees who will serve as additional points of contact using the nominee insert. The authorized representative and the nominees make up what is called the bidder team, and the bidder team is the set of representatives from the bidder who will serve as the main points of contact for the auction manager during the application process. It is important to note that the auction manager cannot discuss a bidder's application with a member from the at the applicant's company that is not part of this bidder team. The third insert requests the information for the legal representative that will that can accept service of process in the state of New Jersey. This does not have to be an individual at the actual bidder. It can be a organization who agrees to accept service of process on behalf of the bidder. I will note, though, that the as part of this insert, you must name an individual at that company. So we need an individual's name that we can contact. The fourth insert is the load-serving entity certification insert. This is only required of bidders who are not already PJM LSEs. And finally, all bidders must make certain certifications that ask if they can perform under the applicable SMA. There are other sets of inserts that are auction specific, and a bidder or an applicant completes one set of inserts. So if an applicant is only applying to participate in a BGS RSCP auction, they must fill out the RSCP designation insert, RSCP certification insert, and the RSCP bidding agreement insert. This is the same for bidders participating in CIEP only. There are inserts that are specific solely to the CIEP auction. There are also a set of inserts that apply to bidders participating in both the BGS CIEP auction and the BGS RSCP auction. I will note that a bidder participating in both the BGS CIEP auction and the RSCP auction does not need to fill out the inserts that are specific to bidders participating in one or the other of the auctions. The designation inserts ask that an officer of the bidder designate or certify that the authorized representative name in the application can serve as the authorized representative. The certifications inserts ask that the applicant certify to the understanding of the SMAs and the auction rules and agree to the confidentiality of the list of qualified bidders that are provided to applicants after successfully completing the requirements of the Part 1 application. Finally, for bidders that are undertaking a bidding agreement, the final insert asks for information that describes the details of that bidding arrangement. Once you have successfully completed the requirements of the Part 1 application, you can review your form, print it out, make sure it's okay, and then you submit it to the auction manager team. Once you submit the Part 1 application, you will receive a confirmation email from BGS auction application that confirms your submission. That's not the end of the process. Once you hit submit, the auction manager provides a review by email, and the application can be either complete, meaning that you've successfully completed all the requirements of the Part 1 application, or can be deficient, meaning that there are clarifications or additional items that the auction manager needs in order for you to fully meet the requirements of the Part 1 application. The review comes to you by 6 p.m. Eastern if the submission is received by noon on a business day. If the submission is received between noon and 6 p.m. Eastern, the review will come to you by 12 p.m. noon the next business day following the submission. Now, bidders, it is important to note that bidders must respond to the deficiency notice, any deficiency notice from the auction manager in order to successfully complete the requirements of the Part 1 application. If you fail to respond to a deficiency notice by the deadline provided by the auction manager, your application will be rejected. The deadline for responses to the deficiency notices is 12 p.m. noon on the Part 1 date, which is December 12th, or 6 p.m. the next business day, whichever is later. In the deficiency notice, the auction manager will lay out in detail the additional requirements in order to make your Part 1 application complete. There will also be details on how to when that deficiency notice is required to be received by the auction manager. After successfully completing the requirements of the Part 1 application, applicants become qualified bidders, and qualified bidders will receive a notification of qualification on December 15th that contains a creditworthiness assessment where the EDCs provide a review of the financial information submitted with your Part 1 application, as well as instructions for completing the Part 2 application. The Part 1 or the Part 2 application is available to bidders upon the close of the Part 1 application. Specifically, it is open once bidders receive the notification of qualification. And the architecture is exactly the same as the Part 1 form. There are fields, radio buttons, uploads for inserts, as well as a toolbar for useful documents, and the same basic functionality of print, save, and submit. Information, or the illustrative Part 2 form, is available for bidders to review on the BGS auction website. It is available under the bidder info tab and under the application process page. You can go there, download that now so you can review the requirements of the Part 2 application prior to the opening of the Part 2 window. The requirements of the Part 2 application are straightforward, and there's not many of them. In the first section, an applicant is asked to confirm the information provided with the Part 1 application. This information will be pre-populated with the information provided during the Part 1 window. The second section is for BGS RSCP bidders only. You will be asked to provide a indicative offer and preliminary interest in each EDC. You'll be asked to confirm the pre-auction security amount. We ask for this information so that we can ensure that the pre-auction security documents that you provide are sufficient enough to support your indicative offers. You're asked to also certify compliance with the association and confidential information rules and provide information necessary to prepare the SMAs. This information is asked again for BGS RSCP bidders in Section 3, and the application, Part 2 application also provides a portion for you to provide justification of omissions where you can explain or provide any missing information similar to what happened with the Part 1 application. I briefly mentioned indicative offers are required with the Part 2 application. And an indicative offer is the maximum number of tranches that a bidder is willing to bid and win statewide for all EDCs at the minimum starting price and at the maximum starting price. And the indicative offer at the maximum starting price is especially important as it determines two things. It determines the amount of pre-auction security required with the Part 2 application. It also determines the maximum number of tranches that the bidder can bid in the auction, in round one of the auction specifically, which is called your initial eligibility. The indicative offer is unique across the two auctions in two ways. For the RSCP auction, bidders must provide interest in each of the EDCs at the minimum maximum starting price that is not asked in the CIP section of the Part 2 application. BGS CIP bidders also must submit a minimum indicative offer at the maximum starting price of at least two tranches in the BGS CIP auction. So I mentioned that the indicative offer helps determine the pre-auction security requirements, which are the following for both the BGS CIP auction and the BGS RCP auction. For the BGS CIP auction, bidders are required to submit a letter of credit in an amount of $375,000 per tranche of the indicative offer at the maximum starting price of $550 per megawatt day. For BGS RCP, the pre-auction security requirements are a little bit different. The amount of the pre-auction letter of credit is $500,000 per tranche of the indicative offer at the maximum starting price. There are additional pre-auction security requirements for certain bidders. Those relying on the financial standing of a guarantor are required to provide a letter of intent to provide a guarantee, and bidders that do not have sufficient unsecured credit are required to provide a letter of reference. Now, as part of the notification of qualification, the auction manager will spell out for you the additional pre-auction security requirements for BGS RCP bidders. Similar to the Part 1 application, there are also inserts that are required with the Part 2 application. Unlike the Part 1 application, the inserts required by the Part 2 application are auction-specific, so there are no joint inserts for bidders that are participating in both the BGS RCP auction and the BGS CIP auction. Qualified bidders applying for participation in either one of the BGS RCP or CIP auctions will submit one set of inserts, and qualified bidders applying for both auctions will submit both sets of inserts. And the first insert in each of the sections or for each of the auctions requires that the bidder make a number of certifications relating to the association and confidential information rules that Chantal referenced. Those are available, again, through the bidder information tab on the auction rules page of the BGS auction website. There's a document that can be downloaded with a Q&A that provides details about association and confidential information rules. The second insert in each of the two auction sections is the contract insert. The auction manager team prepares for the EDCs, the SMAs, for execution upon the completion of the auctions, and we ask that bidders provide the information necessary to complete the contract during the Part 2 window. This information is requested but not required. If it is not provided during the Part 2 window, we will request it after the close of the auctions, and you will have until 12 p.m. following the day of this request to provide us with the information in order to fill out the supplier master agreements. I mentioned in two slides before that bidders are required to provide a pre-auction letter of credit to support their indicative offer. Bidders are required to provide the standard form of the pre-auction letter of credit or a pre-auction letter of credit that incorporates modifications that are acceptable to the EDCs on an optional basis. There is no change to the standard form of the pre-auction letter of credit as a result of the letter of credit comment process. However, the use of prior letters of credit from prior BGS auctions is not acceptable, so your bank needs to use the documents that were posted on November 6th to complete the pre-auction letter of credit requirement. The acceptable modifications have been posted to the BGS auction website and are available for all bidders. Once the bidder has successfully completed the form, uploaded all inserts, and click submit, there will be a review that has the same timing as the review window of the Part 1 application. Specifically, you will receive a confirmation email of your submission. We will also provide a result of the review of the application on the same business day if submission is received before noon or the next business day, or by noon on the next business day otherwise. Bidders, again, must respond to deficiency notices from the auction manager by noon on the Part 2 date or by 6 p.m. the next business day, whichever comes later. Where the Part 2 application process review process differs from the Part 1 application review process is the review of the pre-auction security. Review of the pre-auction security is performed by a committee of representatives from the EDCs and may be performed at a different time than the application itself. So the review, a separate notice will be sent with respect to your pre-auction letter of credit. As part of that review, the EDC or the auction manager will request amendments as necessary or indicate that the pre-auction letter of credit or other credit documents are acceptable in their current form. The last portion that I'll be talking a little bit about today, I'll quickly go through the bidding procedures that happen on the once the auctions start. So bids are submitted online through an auction software. Terms and conditions will be available to bidders in the information packet to be posted to the BGS Auction website. Bidders log into the auction software using login credentials provided by the auction manager to the bidder team with the registration results. System requirements are super simple. You need a standard PC running Windows 7 or later, or Mac with 10.7 or later, an internet connection, and a supported web browser. Details with respect to which web browsers are supported will be available in the information packet. The CIEP auction is scheduled to begin Friday, February 2nd, 2018, with the RSVP auction scheduled to begin the following Monday, February 5th, 2018. The CIEP auction is expected to have 24 rounds on Friday the 2nd, and if the CIEP auction does not close on Friday, it will continue and the two auctions will run concurrently beginning Monday, February 5th. 24 rounds are scheduled for bidding on that Monday for the BGS CIEP auction, and 15 rounds of bidding are scheduled for the BGS RSCP auction on that Monday. Now, the auctions, if the CIP auction continues into Monday, the auctions will run concurrently. And what we've provided here is a sample schedule for the start of bidding on Monday, February 5th. And there are a couple of things that I would like to flag for you, though, with respect to the schedule. First, there will be at most 5 minutes of overlap between the bidding phases of the BGS RSCP auction and the BGS CIP auction for bidders that are participating in both auctions, and at least 5 minutes of no overlap. So, for example, if the bidding phase for the BGS CIP auction is 8 minutes and the bidding phase for the BGS RSCP auction is 10 minutes, the maximum overlap that can occur in the bidding phases across the two auctions is 3 minutes. As another example, if the bidding phase of the BGS CIP auction is 5 minutes, no overlap is allowed regardless of the length of the BGS RSCP bidding phase. Finally, there are three types of pauses that can occur in the auction, two of which bidders have direct control over. The first are extensions to the bidding phase of a round. Each bidder has two extensions that are available to extend the bidding phase by 15 minutes. These are typically used for technical problems. For the convenience of bidders, the auction manager extends the bidding phase of round one by 15 minutes. And I'd also like to flag that the extensions run concurrently. If two bidders both submit extensions, the bidding phase will not be extended by 15 minutes for one bidder and an additional 15 minutes for the other bidder. It will be extended by 15 minutes for all bidders. Each bidder also has what's called a recess request to extend the reporting phase by no less than 20 minutes. These are used towards the end of the auction, specifically after round 10 and after the total excess supply in the previous round falls below a certain threshold as detailed in the auction rules. This gives bidders extra time to consider their bids after the reports of the previous round have come out. The auction manager can also call timeout using a timeout. For example, in the case of a general technical difficulty, we do not expect to make many timeout calls during the course of the auction.
So we'll continue the presentation in the next two sections. I'll provide highlights of some of the provisions of the BGS Supplier Master Agreement, and I'll also provide more detail on the auction rules, so giving a little more detail on what bidding entails in the clock auction format. So first, for the BGS Supplier Master Agreement, we've already mentioned that those are part of the filing and part of what is approved by the board. Those agreements are standard statewide, so it's the same agreement that's used by all of the EDCs. They are approved by the board, and applicants must agree to these standard contract terms to qualify to participate in the auction. As Paul mentioned when he went through the certification inserts that applicants have to fill out. Now, of note is that in those supplier master agreements are also standard forms for credit instruments to post security during the supply period. Namely, there's a standard form of guarantee, just the same for the BGS-RSCP and BGS-CIEP supplier master agreements. And there's also a standard form for the letter of credit that may be used to post security during the supply period. That letter of credit was the subject of comments by potential bidders, and there is a list of approved modification for that standard letter of credit that is posted at this time on the BGS auction website. So those modifications have been approved by the EDCs for use on an optional basis. The supplier master agreements fully describe the product in each auction, by which I mean what the bidder is offering to supply by bidding in the BGS auction, and we've gone through this in the first part of the presentation. The BGS supplier is responsible for full requirement service. The two agreements, the BGS-CIP, BGS-RSCP supplier master agreement, are specific to each auction. They provide the responsibilities for these two types of suppliers, which are basically the same, but the payment terms, as we discussed in the first part of the presentation, are different. One of the responsibilities that we didn't discuss in the first part of the presentation is that the BGS supplier is also responsible for meeting the renewable portfolio standards. So there are renewable portfolio standard requirements for Class 1 renewable energy, Class 2, as well as solar electric generation that are provided as a percentage of the energy supplied by the BGS supplier. And the BGS supplier, to fulfill those requirements, will transfer renewable energy credits, or RECs, Class 1 and Class 2, and solar renewable energy credits, or SRECs, to the EDCs. And the BGS supplier effects that transfer by use of its retail LSC account in PJM GAC. So that means that the BGS supplier must apply to have a retail LSC account for that purpose. Now, a supplier that doesn't meet the requirements by providing those renewable energy credits will be subject to payment of an alternative compliance payment. The EDCs then are the ones that are going to be submitting the required annual compliance reports, and they do that on behalf of the BGS-RSCP and the BGS-CIEP suppliers. I'll talk briefly about the credit provisions in the supplier master agreements for a full description of those credit provisions, including description of the credit worthiness standards and description of the security that's required under the agreement. You should consult Article 6 of each of the supplier master agreements. At a high level, for the BGS-CIEP supplier, the security required is an amount per tranche that's called a credit exposure, and that is set at $70,000 per tranche. For BGS RSCP suppliers, there's also a fixed amount per tranche that's called the independent credit requirement and is $2.4 million per tranche at the beginning of the supply period, but that amount does decline over the term of the agreement. However, the contract is also marked to market, so there's potentially a second credit requirement that is the mark to market requirement. There are two separate requirements, but there are also two separate credit lines that BGS suppliers can have that aggregates the obligations under the different BGS contracts that they may hold. So there's one credit line that's for purposes of the mark to market exposure under all BGS RSCP supplier master agreement that would be held by a supplier, as well as the BGS CIEP credit exposure. So there's a credit line provided for that, depending on the credit worthiness assessment of the supplier, namely depending on the tangible net worth and the credit rating of the supplier or its guarantor. And there's another credit line that's for the BGS RSCP independent credit requirement under $2.4 million per tranche. I'll talk a little bit about Section 15.9. Section 15.9 provides for the recovery and for potentially an adjustment in payment for changes in transmission-related charges over the term of the BGS contract. The EDCs have filed to ask for a modification to this section that was rejected by the board, and therefore the Section 15.9 in the Supplier Master Agreement will be the same as it was in the 2017 BGS auction. There's nothing that's required from a supplier under this section. Rather, if there is a change in the firm transmission rate, EDCs will file with the board to collect any changes in transmission rate from ratepayers and will collect those amounts for the benefit of BGS suppliers. There are various filings that the EDCs make under this section and orders from the board related to Section 15.9, and those are also posted on the BGS auction website. As for other board orders, those are posted under the auction tab and there's a BPU for the Board of Public Utilities docs page under that tab that has the orders. Now, I'll close by noting that there are changes that are possible during the three-year period. So one thing that we said when we talked about the payments and the rates was that there are seasonal factors for the BGS RSCP Supplier Master Agreement that will be established in final form no later than 6 days before the auction, and those seasonal factors do not change during the term of the Supplier Master Agreement. But there are changes that could happen that could affect BGS suppliers and more particularly BGS RSCP suppliers. For example, the rate design that is filed by the EDCs is subject to an annual review with the BGS proceeding cycle. So there could be changes there that could eventually affect BGS suppliers. There could be changes to the renewable portfolio standard and changes to the alternative compliance payment levels. There could be changes on the renewable portfolio standard side that could affect suppliers. And it could also be changes to the CIEP line. As I mentioned, the CIEP line is 500 kW, so it's basically the level of demand at which customers in certain rate classes become CIEP customers rather than RSCP customers. In this next section, I'll talk a little bit more about the auction rules. We talked about the clock auction format being multiple product and multiple round, and part of the advantage of such a format is that suppliers can switch their bids from one EDC to another in a given auction. So as the prices decline from one round to the next, as the relative prices change across the EDCs, suppliers have the ability to switch their bids from one EDC to another in a given auction, so within the RSCP auction across EDCs or within the BGS CIP auction across EDCs. So in the next few slides, I'll be giving examples of bids and explaining how bidding changes throughout the course of the auction. And just a reminder, some examples are going to be BGS RSCP type example with prices in cents per kilowatt hour, while other prices are going to be in dollars per megawatt day, which is a BGS CIP kind of example. Let's start at the simplest, which is for round one, what is a bid? And a bid fundamentally doesn't change in any round of the auction. A bid is always going to be, first and foremost, a number of tranches for each of the EDCs. So in round one, a bidder would state the number of tranches that it's ready to supply for PSCNG, JCP&L, ACE, and RICO at the round one prices, which, as you will remember, are selected between the minimum and the maximum starting prices that were announced on November 15th. Now, there are two constraints on these on this bid in round one. The first is that the total number of tranches bid on all EDC cannot exceed the bidder's initial eligibility. And as we will see, the bidder can only bid the same number of tranches or fewer as the auction goes on. So the number of tranches you bid in round one is the most number of tranches you will ever bid in the entire auction. Hence, the importance of setting the indicative offer at a level at which you are comfortable. The second constraint is for the BGS RSCP auction only, namely that the number of tranches that are bid on any given EDC cannot exceed that EDC load cap. So that's a bid in round one, and to remind you, a round in the clock auction format has three phases. It has a bidding phase where bidders can submit their bids. Then the bidding phase closes, and there is a calculation comparing the number of tranches that are bid for each EDC to the number of tranches that are needed in a determination of the prices for the next round. And finally, there's a reporting phase where bidders are provided information. Specifically, bidders are provided with a information regarding excess supply. Namely, they are provided with a range of total excess supply. In this example here, between 151 and 155 tranches, which means there's an exact number of total excess supply, and it falls within that range. In addition, bidders are provided the prices for the next round. So this is what bidders would see as a report at the end of round one. This range of excess supply at the start of the auction, when total excess supply is high, is a range of five numbers, but those ranges do include more excess supply numbers as the auction goes on and total excess supply is reduced. The bidder also has a report about its own bid, but a bidder has no information about a specific other bidder's bid, identities of other bidders, or eligibilities of other bidders. So it's strictly information about, in aggregate, in the auction, and about the specific prices for the next round. So we mentioned that from one round to the next, the prices tick down. So the amount or the manner in which they tick down is the decrement in the auction. So the price for an EDC is going to tick down specifically when there are more tranches bid than the tranche target or the number of tranches needed for that particular EDC. Now, the manner in which the prices are ticked down is set by formulas that are in the auction rules. There are in appendices at the end of the auction rules. Generally speaking, there are three distinct regimes or three distinct ranges in which the decrements are selected. At the start of the auction in Regime 1, decrements are generally between 0.5% and 5%, then between 0.375% to 3.75%, and then at the end between 0.25% to 2.5%. And what determines the changes from one regime to the next is as total excess supply is reduced. And Regime 3 is when we get to the last range of excess supply for the auction. The formulas in the auction rules currently are provisional, and they will be finalized upon the registration of bidders, as they depend on various things, including the number of registered bidders in the auction. So we talked about round one. It is very simple, just a number of tranches for each of the EDCs. Now, in round two, a bidder will have an ability to do various things. It can certainly and always keep the number of tranches bid for each EDC the same as it did in round one, but it is also able to withdraw, meaning remove tranches from the auction or bid fewer tranches in total in the auction. It's able to switch, meaning to reduce the tranches bid on one EDC while increasing the tranches that are bid on another. And it can do both. So reduce the number of tranches in total bid in the auction and also reallocate those tranches among the various EDCs. Now, importantly, a bidder can only request a reduction, so to reduce the number of tranches it bids on an EDC, either because it's withdrawing tranches from the auction altogether or because it's trying to reallocate and switch from that EDC to another, can only do that if the price for the EDC has ticked down. If the price has not ticked down, then the previous offer must be maintained. So all offers are binding and cannot be rescinded if the price is not changing. So that's at a high level what can happen in round two. In terms of the rules in round two and for the following round, the first rule is that the bidder cannot bid more than its eligibility, and the eligibility in round two is the number of tranches bid in round one. Hence my comment earlier that the number of tranches you bid in round one is the most that you can ever bid, in that you can only bid that same amount or less as the auction progresses. In addition, as we mentioned, for the BGS RSCP auction, there are, in addition to the statewide load cap, EDC load caps that cannot be exceeded. So what that means in practice is that in addition to the bidder specifying a number of tranches for each of the EDCs, a bidder may be asked to provide additional information depending on the particular bid that's being submitted. So the next few slides provides those circumstances where a bidder would be asked to provide additional information over and above the number of tranches bid for each of the EDCs. So in this first example, a bidder is withdrawing tranches. So we can see that from round one to round two, because in round one, the bidder bid 15 tranches in total. In round two, the bidder is bidding 14 tranches in total, and the bidder is withdrawing that single tranche from Atlantic City Electric. So if a bidder is withdrawing, so reducing the total number of tranches bid from one round to the next, the bidder must provide an exit price or a best offer for the tranche that is being withdrawn. So that final and best offer must be above the current going price, because the bidder is no longer willing to bid that tranche at, for ACE year, at a price of 14.65 cents per kilowatt hour, but it must be below or equal to the previous price, because it was willing to bid that tranche at a price of 14.75 cents. So in this example, the exit price that's selected by the bidder 14.712 cents per kilowatt hour. So that means that to have a complete bid in this particular circumstance, a bidder would not only be required to provide the number of tranches for each EDC, but also the exit price for any tranche that is withdrawn. Another circumstance where a bidder could be required to provide additional information is when switching. So not always when switching. So when withdrawing, you always have to provide additional information in the form of an exit price. But in switching, in a particular circumstance where a bidder is reducing the tranche's bid on one or more EDC and this is the important bit, increasing the number of tranches bid on more than one EDC, then the bidder will be asked for a switching priority. So this is the circumstances here. So the bidder is only switching. The bidder is bidding 12 tranches in round one, 12 tranches in round two. So there's no withdrawing of tranches here. But there is a reallocation of the tranches where the bidder is reducing the number of tranches bid on JSP&L and increasing the number of tranches bid on PSCNG and ACE by one. And that will not be apparent to you because the font color is not displaying properly on the slide. So just so you know, the first column is for PSCNG, the second column is for JSP&L, third column is for ACE, and the fourth column is for RICO. So there is then a reduction from 7 to 5 in the tranches bid for JSP&L, an increase from 2 to 3 for PSCNG, and 2 to 3 for ACE. So a bidder must provide switching priority in case what would happen is that one of those tranches would be allowed to switch, but not both of them. So what the bidder is saying by putting a switching priority is if there's only one tranche that is where the switch is allowed, then that tranche should go to PSCNG that has a switching priority of one. So if those switching priorities will be used only if some of the reductions are granted and not all. And that could happen if what is happening is that when the bidder is reducing the number of tranches bid for JSP&L from 7 to 5, that is such that with all the other bids from the other bidder, there is now an insufficient number of tranches to fill the target or the number needed for JSP&L. So some of the requests to either withdraw or switch will have to be denied, and if it would happen that of the two tranches that are reduced by that bidder, one is retained, then the switching priority would be used at that point. And when the tranche is retained from a denied switch, it is retained at the last price that it was freely bid. I'll go through one additional circumstance where a bidder could need to provide additional information, and that's when the bidder is both switching and withdrawing. So here the bidder is bidding on 10 tranches in round one and bidding on 9 tranches in round two. So the bidder is withdrawing one tranche. But in addition, the bidder is reallocating the tranches that it's bidding. So it's reducing the number of tranches bid on JSP&L by 3 from 5 to 2. It's reducing the tranches bid on RICO from 1 to 0 and increasing the number of tranches bid on PSCNG from 2 to 3. So the reason that there's more information required here from the bidder is that it's not apparent whether the tranches that is being withdrawn is withdrawn from RICO or is withdrawn from JSP&L. And the reason that that's important is that the tranches that will be designated as being withdrawn is the tranche for which the bidder will be able to provide an exit price. So in this example, the bidder chooses JSP&L as being the tranche that it's withdrawing and is providing an exit price that's above the going price of $464.55, but below the prior price of $475. So those are the changes to the bidding for round two, meaning that in addition to providing the number of tranches bid for each EDC, additional information may be required as well. Correspondingly, there will be changes to reporting results back to bidders starting in round two, in that when they get the results of their bid, they will now know or be informed if, when making a request to switch or withdraw, whether it has been granted or not. And again, the auction manager may retain tranches from withdrawals or switches if it's necessary to fill the tranche target or the number of tranches needed for the EDCs. When the auction manager fills the tranche target for an EDC, it fills it in price order. So starting with the tranches bid at the going price, then by retaining exits or withdrawals with the lower exit price are selected first, and finally by denying switches. So the bidder will get information about its own bid, information that any tranches that were requested to be withdrawn, whether it's retained or not, and if it was retained, it will be confirmed that it's retained at the name exit price. Same thing if there was a switch, whether that has been granted or not, and if it's denied, the tranche is retained at the last price at which it was freely bid, which is the price from the prior round. So the rules that I've explained, although there's some additional subtleties for rounds 3, 4, et cetera, but are basically the same in terms of the additional information that bidders would have to provide for any further rounds, the rules are the same as in round 2. And the process will continue and prices will tick down until the number of tranches that are needed is equal to the number of tranches, the supply that's bid, or to be more precise, the auction will close when total excess supply equals zero, and at that point, prices can no longer tick down and have arrived at their final auction price levels. Note that all bidding on all EBCs will stop at the same time, and bidders that win tranches for an EDC will get all bidders that win tranches for an EDC in a given auction will get the same price. So it is a uniform pricing rule. At this point, we had one more question asking what was the modification to Section 15.9 that the board rejected, given that this is not part of the approved process. I think we won't spend a lot of time on that, but it's certainly posted on the BGS auction website, explained in the filing of June 30th by the EDCs. It's also apparent from comparing the 2017 Section 15.9 Supplier Master Agreement to the one that was filed this year. So that concludes the second portion of the presentation.